Thank you, Brother James. I appreciate that. Appreciate that heartfelt prayer, and certainly great concern for those that were listed here tonight, and that stand in great need of prayer, and trust that the Lord will watch over and bless them as He'll watch over and bless us tonight. I will try to condense this, and I'll tell you right now, it'll be a struggle from the start, but I'd like to go to the fourth chapter of the second book of Corinthians and present a thought that the Apostle Paul basically takes an entire chapter to really delve into the things of our lives, what has impact on us, and how we should, I don't know a better way to say that, how we should manage those encounters. He begins this chapter with this verse: "Therefore, seeing we have this ministry, as we have received mercy, we faint not." If you go back into the third chapter of 2 Corinthians, the Apostle Paul really provides a separation between that which was the Old Testament law, the Old Testament service under the law, and then magnifies the what he refers to as the administration of grace that we have even to this day, and how much more glorious this grace is. And obviously we understand and know just how glorious grace is, because the same apostle says in Ephesians chapter 2 that by grace we are saved. So we understand the glory that's found in this administration of grace. And then he says towards the end, verse 17 of chapter 3, he says, "Now the Lord is that Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty." So he highlights the Spirit in this discourse regarding what the Old Testament Jews did, and then what the Lord has implemented in the New Testament, the institution of his church. And then he goes in and says that, "Therefore, seeing we have this ministry, as we have received mercy, we faint not." So that's an interesting statement. We faint not. Now, there's several verses that go right after this that I'm going to encourage you to read, but I want to skip over these verses and not delve into them in the detail they deserve in order that we might get to the middle of this chapter. But keep in mind the words, "we faint not," in relation to the spiritual aspects of chapter 3, and then the aspects of the ministry he talks about at the beginning of chapter 4. He said, he goes on down, and we'll go to the sixth verse. He says, "For God, who commanded the light to shine out of darkness, has shined in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ." So this God that we serve, who caused the light to shine out of darkness, he says, has shined in our hearts. We know and understand that the Lord has placed the Spirit of His Son into our hearts, as Paul says in Galatians chapter 4, crying, "Abba, Father." We understand that the very Spirit is indwelling within us, and that by virtue of that Spirit, he says, to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. So this Spirit that God has placed in us in the new birth, it shines a light of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. So we see the working of the Spirit in us. There, it's not when we're born again, it's not that the Spirit is placed in us and that's it. But the Spirit is active in us. The Apostle Paul says the Spirit itself maketh intercessions for us with groanings that cannot be uttered. So this Spirit is active in us. And in this case, he says that it shines a light of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. Now, why is that so important? Why are those aspects important? He could have just said it shines a light or it manifests the glory of God. But he says it in that very specific way. He has shined in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. That last part of that, in the face of Jesus Christ. The Apostle Paul applies that with us thinking about we faint not. And then the question comes around is, how do we faint not? How do we not faint? Well, he says that this is what God has worked in our hearts. This is what God has worked in the inward man. This is what God has worked in the new birth, in the giving of his, or the sending of his Spirit, the Spirit of his Son in our hearts. So in the very next verse, he says, but we have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the excellency of the power of that the excellency of the power may be of God and not of us. So Paul takes everything he's talked about to this point, and he says that what God has wrought in us, that it's a treasure, but it's in an earthen vessel. And he says that the power may be of God and not of us. We struggle. I struggle in my life in relinquishing power. Let's put it that way. I like to, you know, in my secular life, I like to do things myself because I know they'll be done my way, and I like to think that it would be the right way, but it's obviously not always the right way. But I like that control. I mean, that's something that I have to deal with, to relinquish that control to allow somebody else to do something. You know, that in our lives, that's how we learn. When my dad would pull me into whatever project he might be working on, and he would loose the reins a little bit and let me do something, and I may have done it wrong. And if I did, he would show me, you know, and that's not how you do it. This is how you do it. You know, that's how we learn. That's how we experience. That's how we grow. So Paul says that, but we have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the power may be of God and not of us. So he's telling us without any argument, without any qualification, that the power is of God and it's not us. It's not my power. It's not something that I've rendered of my own self. It's not something that I've created of my own self. This power is of God, and I'm thankful for that. And I know that you're thankful that the power is of God, because this is an earthen vessel that we live in. This is a body of clay. This is a body that commits sin, with a natural mind that commits sin. And this power that God has bestowed upon us, the light of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ, that's of God. And Paul says we have this treasure, but the kicker is, we have it in an earthen vessel. So what's the point there? Let's read on just a little bit more. Then he says in verse 8 and 9, something that we're all familiar with, right? We are troubled on every side, yet not distressed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. We're persecuted, but not forsaken. And finally, he says, cast down, but not destroyed. So that's interesting, right? He talks about the Spirit of God that shined a light of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. He refers to it as a treasure, but it's in an earthen vessel. And then he goes into these four aspects where he says, we're troubled. He says, we're troubled on every side, yet not distressed. So he's showing the contrast here. We're troubled on every side. That means we're crowded about. That means from every side, front, back, right, left. I mean, every angle. We're troubled. It means to crowd. That word trouble means to crowd about. You know, I mean, I don't like being packed into crowds. It doesn't set well with me. I don't like getting in the crowded elevators. I don't like, you know, having this crowd, you know, compress me. But he says we're troubled on every side, yet not distressed. And that word means to be cramped or to be pressed. So we're crowded about, but we're not cramped and pressed. You know, I think about the experience the Lord had when he was going to, I can't think of his name now, but the man, the man that had a daughter who lay dying, and the woman, that came and touched his garment and she was made whole. You know, it said the press was around him. I mean, he was compacted. He was cramped by all of these people wanting to see him, wanting to hear him, wanting to touch him. And when one touched him, he stopped and said, "Who touched me?" And Peter said, "Lord, I mean, everybody's touching you." That's my words. All right. Everybody's touching you. Everybody. What do you mean? He said, "Somebody touched me, for I perceive that virtue has gone out of me." So now Paul turns the tables on us. He says, we're troubled on every side. That's the earthen vessel. He says, yet not distressed. That's the power that's of God and not of us. Then he says, we're perplexed, but not in despair. We're perplexed, but not in despair. So our minds conjure up things that perplex us. In other words, we don't see how it will work. We don't see how it will go. But he says we're perplexed, but not in despair. Have you ever thought about that? Think about maybe a school, an issue you have at school or an issue you have at work where you simply cannot figure out how to make it work right and how to make the outcome the way the outcome should be. I'll tell you what, when I find myself in that, I start despairing some. Because it's my responsibility to do this or do that or do the other, just like it's your responsibility. But Paul says, remember, he says we have this treasure in earthen vessels that the power may be of God and not of us. He says we're perplexed, but not in despair. We're perplexed, but not in despair. Remember, he says, since we have this ministry, we've received mercy, we faint not. Now, I don't know about you, but I know times where I feel like I've fainted. I have fallen. I've fallen by the wayside. In my weariness and the weariness of life and the weariness of the trials and tribulations and the weariness of sin and the weariness of sickness. But Paul says we faint not. And now he's telling us how it is that we don't faint. We're troubled on every side, yet not distressed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. We're persecuted. So we're troubled, we're perplexed, we're persecuted. These are things that happen to us. These aren't things that happen to other people, right? This isn't something, well, that happens to them. That doesn't happen to me. No, these are things that happen to us in our daily lives. We're troubled, we're perplexed. He says we're persecuted. And yet in all of those, he says we're not in despair. We're not distressed. We're not in despair. We're persecuted. And then he says, but not forsaken. Remember the comparison, flesh and spirit. We're troubled, but we're not distressed. One is rendered by the flesh, the other by the spirit. Troubled by the flesh, not distressed by the spirit. We're perplexed in the flesh, but not in despair in the spirit. We're persecuted in our lives, yet not forsaken. And that word forsaken is the same word that's used in Hebrews chapter 13, I believe verse 5. Let your conversation be without covetousness and be content with such things as ye have. For he has said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. Now we're starting to see and understand the spiritual aspect of our lives. He says, I'll never leave thee. That means I'll never leave your side. I'll walk with you from beginning to end. I will always be there. You might say, well, Brother Mark, I'll tell you what, I feel sometimes the Lord has just clean gone from me. No, that's not it. Perhaps we've clean gone from the Lord. Maybe we've turned and walked somewhere else. But the Lord's right there, but we're not looking at him. We're not leaning on him. And then we find ourselves troubled and in despair. We find ourselves troubled and in distress. We find ourselves perplexed and in despair. But he says, persecuted, but not forsaken. You know, he says, the Lord has said, I will never leave thee. That means he won't leave our side. Then he says, nor forsake thee. And you know what that means? I won't leave you behind. I won't leave you behind. So now he says, in our persecutions, we're not forsaken. The Lord's not going to leave us behind. Then finally, he says, cast down. I'm telling you, I've been cast down so many times in my life. And I know you've been cast down in your life. But he says, cast down, but not destroyed. Now, Paul just said that the flesh is weak, right? We have this treasure in earthen vessels that the power may be of God and not of us. So the comparison there, or the contrast there, is that God has the power and we have none. And that's the truth. And then he lines out these four things that attack us in our natural lives. And then these four things of God that prevent us from being utterly falling away, or to be utterly cast out, or to be utterly cast down and destroyed. We're cast down, but not destroyed. Why? Because he will never leave us nor forsake us. Then he says in verse 10, always bearing about in the body the dying of the Lord Jesus, that the life also of Jesus might be made manifest in our bodies. So again, he's saying that this life is found in here. It's found in this inward man. And this life is Jesus Christ. Here's a good way to think about it. Think about Paul on Mars Hill in Acts chapter 17, when he says, in him we live, move, and have our being. Live, move, and have our being. Every aspect of our lives. In him we live. Well, you say, yes, I know we have spiritual life because of him. Brothers and sisters, we have natural life because of him as well. We move. Well, I understand that God moves in us. No. Absolutely, yes. But in him we move. In him we live and move. I mean, it's by the Lord's mercy and grace, they're able to do what it is that we do. Even the movement of our mouths, the speaking, from our throats, the movement of the tongue, the movement of the hands, the autonomic systems of the body that control all of these things in us that we don't control, right? The heart, the lungs. You say, well, I can hold my breath. Yeah, but I tell you what, there's only a matter of time that you can hold your breath, and then you're going to be gasping for air. In him we live, in him we move. And finally, he says, and have our being. Have you ever stopped to think that when you're feeling troubled and perplexed and persecuted and cast down, and you get up in the morning and you think, Lord, how am I going to even get out of bed and start approaching my day? And the first word, Lord, is how. In him we live, move, and have our being. It's all in him, right? And that's what Paul is teaching us here. Now, okay, we've got to skip down here and get towards the end of this chapter. So he says in verse 15, for all things are for your sakes, that the abundant grace might through the thanksgiving of many redound to the glory of God. For the which cause, he says, we faint not. He's brought it full circle. He started the chapter with, therefore, seeing we have this ministry, as we have received mercy, we faint not. And then he goes through here and he tells us how it is that we don't faint. We become weary. I understand. We become weary, where we grow tired. The song says, I'm tired, I'm weak, I'm worn. I mean, don't misunderstand me. We grow weary in life. We had that list of people that are undergoing treatment for cancer or are dealing with this terrible thing called COVID. We're concerned about them. They're going through struggles, in their health. I mean, we get tired. We get weak. We get worn. I remember my mom saying, I am flat worn out. As she was getting up in her years, she just said, I'm just worn out. Don't get me wrong. I understand that. I've experienced that just like you've experienced it. But Paul says there's something that enables us, even though we're tired and weak and worn, there's something that enables us, that gives us strength to not faint. By the way, to not be perplexed, to not be distressed, to not be forsaken, to not be destroyed. And that is the very Spirit of God that he has placed in us. And he says, for the which cause we faint not, but though our outward man perish, yet the inward man is renewed day by day. So he gets down to that very verse related to, but we have this treasure in earthen vessels. Now he says, for which cause we faint not, but though our outward man perish, there's the persecution. There's the trouble. There's the perplexed. There's the cast down. And this outward man perish. I mean, as soon as we take our first breath, we begin our trip to the grave, my friends. That's what this outward man is. There is no strength in this outward man, but in the Spirit that God has placed in us, therein lies our strength. Therein lies our hope. Therein lies our consolation. Therein lies our everything, that no matter how dark it may be, no matter how the tribulation may seem overwhelming in your life, that there is the very Spirit of God in our hearts crying, Abba, Father. And it says the inward man is renewed day by day. So when we think, I can't take another step, I just don't think I can do anything else, the Spirit of God in us is what causes us to faint not. We faint not. For the which cause we faint not. But though our outward man perish, the inward man is renewed day by day. Then he says this, for our light affliction. And that means not weighty, right? That means to be light, like a feather. Light as a feather. Our light affliction. You know, if we read that, when we are in the midst of great affliction, that might not go over so well, right? What do you mean our light affliction? What do you mean my light affliction? What I'm going through is terrible, but hang on. Look at what the Apostle Paul is saying. It all goes back to not fainting. It all goes back to the Spirit of God that dwells in us. He says, for our light affliction, which is but for a moment. Yeah, it doesn't seem like it, does it? Worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. So he says, our light affliction is this, and it worketh in us a far more exceeding and eternal weight. It's something that has weight. It's something that has bearing. It's something that has meaning. And the next verse, if you want to understand what he's talking about, it worketh in us a far more exceeding eternal weight of glory while we look not at the things which are seen. You know, the Apostle Peter looked at the things which were seen, right? When he asked the Lord, when the Lord came walking on the water, and Peter said, bid me come, and he went out and he walked on the water. But then he started looking at all the things that were seen. And what happened? He sank. But what did he do in his distress? What did he do in his trial and tribulation? Lord, help, right? And the Lord took him by the hand, and they were in the boat and on the other side of the lake. You see, while we look, he says, while we look not at the things which are seen. The things which are seen are nothing but distractions, brothers and sisters. It's nothing but things that will derail us, that will cause us to lose sight of why we're here and what we're doing, and more importantly, where by the grace of God that we're headed. And he says, it worketh our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory while we look not at the things which are seen. So if we're not looking at the things which are seen, and it's working in us an exceeding eternal weight of glory, then what are we looking at? But at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. You see, we faint not when we look at the things that are not seen. And then you want to know how you look at the things that are not seen? Go to the fifth chapter. And I believe the Apostle Paul in the fifth chapter in a parenthetical statement says, for we walk by faith and not by sight. In fact, the first verse, he goes right into the first verse of the fifth chapter and says, for we know that if our earthly house of this tabernacle were dissolved, we have a building of God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heaven. He says, if this were dissolved today, we know. As we look at the things which are not seen, those things which are eternal, we know that we have a building of God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. Then he says in verse 2, for in this we groan earnestly desiring to be clothed upon with our house, which is from heaven. So how do we faint not? It's not through the weakness of the flesh. We have this treasure in an earthen vessel that the power may be of God and not of us. How do we faint not? By that Spirit of God. Let me give you this in closing. In the 12th chapter of 2 Corinthians, and you all familiar with this, Paul having his experience, his prayer to God, to remove the thorn three times, he says in verse 9, and he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee. This is God answering Paul's prayer. My grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Not God's weakness. God is not weak. God's strength is perfected in our weakness by that manifestation of his Spirit within us. That's what Paul's talking about in the fourth chapter. Then Paul says, most gladly, therefore, I will rather glory in my infirmities that the power of Christ may rest upon me, that he would have knowledge that all that he does is by the power of Christ and not by himself. Then he says in verse 10. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then am I strong. So Paul says, I glory in these things. These are light affliction. Because when I'm weak, then I'm strong. Not that he's strong in the flesh, but that when he realizes he is weak in the flesh and without the Lord, he can do nothing. He says, then am I strong. And when we're strong in the Spirit of God, we faint not. You know, the Lord told Israel, and I believe in the book of Malachi, at the very end of the Old Testament, he says, prove me now. He says, bring all the tithes into the storehouse and prove me now herewith that I will not open up the windows of heaven and pour out a blessing that cannot be contained. I'll tell you what, when we prove God, I mean, when we prove him or, like the songwriter says, 'tis so sweet to trust in Jesus, then we find ourselves of ourselves weak. But then we find in that weakness the ultimate strength that only the Spirit of God can give. And then it makes our afflictions light. And just for a moment, and while we look at the things that are not seen, but the things which are not seen, then we see how it worketh in us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. I'm telling you what, the weight of glory is a good weight to have. It is a good press. It is a good burden. It is a strength to our hope. And I trust someday that burden, that eternal weight that I experience in this life, that we'll open our eyes in heaven and immortal glory and we'll see in perfection. And then we'll not be weak anymore, but we'll be strong in his righteousness and in his glory and in his grace. In this life, though, when we realize we're weak, then we're strong, then we faint not by the wayside. May he richly bless and keep you is my prayer. Love each and every one of you. Appreciate you being here tonight. Brother James.